because you can handle the truth.
Top of the second hour of today's Road Warrior Radio broadcast this Monday, March 27th, 2017. There's a lot we got to talk about, but I'm zeroed in on the subject of terrorism. It's interesting, the 60 Minutes piece examining the Garland, Texas incident a couple of years ago, the shooting at the Draw Muhammad cartoon event, shooting by Alton Simpson and Nader Sufi. 60 Minutes in examining the incident, and they say, you know, after Wednesday's terror attack in London, again, you know, Khalid Massoud, a man with many aliases, wasn't born by that name, was allegedly a recent Muslim convert, only not visiting strip clubs and binge drinking and doing drugs and things, really doesn't quite sound like it qualifies as a Muslim convert. It sounds more like a weak-minded person in the fashion of the intelligence community hapless dupe, Manchurian candidate, who gets strung out, as is typically the fashion. You know, if you understand, if you recall the story of the alleged 9/11 hijackers, same thing. You know, these people who are devout, radical Islamic jihadists are out partying the night before, days before, at strip clubs, binge drinking, doing drugs and things like that. This is not the behavior of militant Islamists, but hapless Manchurian candidates, dupes, patsies, getting strung out by their handlers so that they're not coherent enough to really thwart the plot that pits them as the Manchurian candidate, but just functional enough really to kind of be a passenger in their own terror plot. Like folks like Muhammad, for example, the would-be Pioneer Square bomber. So Wednesday's terror attack, like all of the others of its fashion, last Wednesday's, the London nonsense, is when it has all of the earmarks of something and doesn't seem to fit into something else, you know, being called a terrorist or an ISIS-inspired plot. I mean, it just, do people not think, you know, ISIS is the organization, they're still Al-Qaeda, they're still the Taliban, they're still all these other organizations, but ISIS is the flavor of the month right now until we wear that one out. And just coincidentally, ISIS claims responsibility for these attacks. No other organization, no other Al-Qaeda-esque organization, just ISIS. How convenient that the narrative, there's this continuity of narrative that suits a specific political agenda, Operation Gladio B, how convenient, to scare the people into submission, essentially. And with this fear-based rhetoric or this fear-based narrative. So we're hearing, as we always hear, you know, remember, pick one. The Esteban Santiago nonsense. Santiago goes into the FBI station office in Alaska, says the CIA is messing with my head, works for the security contractor, Signal 88, I think is what it, the name of the company, anyway, with CIA ties, and says the CIA is messing with my head, surrenders to a voluntary psychological evaluation. Nope, ship shape, he's released, given his gun back, the same pistol that he takes with him on the plane through Minneapolis down to Fort Lauderdale to shoot the first people he sees when he gets off the plane, and he can get his gun loaded, because that's what nobody would ever do. Doesn't make any sense. Motive unclear. There is no motive, at least not that makes sense to the general public, because the story is not what we're alleged to believe. It never is. Khalid Massoud, same thing. Motive unclear. We may never know the motive. Yeah, the reason we may not is, again, you know, a fallacy of equivocation. We might not, we probably won't know, because it's not a plot that's been orchestrated the way that you would think. Messing with people's heads. Weak-minded people in particular. Why is it always the same MO? These weak-minded people, people with, that are mentally unstable, they're usually on some kind of psychotropic medication, that are strung out. They do these things that are random, nonsensical, don't make any sense. And the intelligence community is notorious for manufacturing these plots. We just played Trevor Aronson's piece. But there's more to it. There's this constant narrative of fear and terror. Speaking of that, and speaking of the Garland, Texas incident, the piece that I mentioned, NBC News, FBI alerted Garland police about Elton Simpson hours before shooting. And if that's true, and if, as the 60 Minutes piece this weekend pointed out, the suspects, Elton Simpson and Nadir Sufi, were being tailed by an undercover FBI agent, why did it take place at all? Isn't that an obvious question? So here is the fear-based rhetoric from the NBC piece that I mentioned. Go ahead, please. That most recent one, the NBC piece. FBI says it alerted Garland police about Elton Simpson. So, the clip that we're loading, it includes...
Meanwhile, the FBI is sounding the alarm this morning on the growing influence of ISIS in America in the wake of the terrorist attack on that Draw Muhammad event in Garland, Texas. NBC's justice correspondent Pete Williams has more on this for us. Pete, good morning.
Willie, good morning to you. The FBI Director James Comey says hundreds of people in the U.S., maybe thousands, are now following jihadist social media He says the FBI is investigating hundreds of potential homegrown extremists with cases open in every state. The FBI says the Texas plot is dramatic proof of the power of ISIS propaganda through social media. FBI Director James Comey says flatly, "I know there are other Elton Simpsons out there." The ISIS message, he says, is relentless, urging followers to stage attacks. It's almost as if there is a devil sitting on the shoulder saying, "Kill, kill, kill," all day long, Comey says. Congress is worried, too, about social media as a powerful recruiting tool.
If you have an interest in jihadism, you can find other people who are interested in that very easily, very quickly, and you can establish relationships with them.
Comey also disclosed that just 3 hours before Sunday's attack in Garland, Texas, the FBI sent police there a bulletin with Elton Simpson's picture and car license number shortly after learning that he expressed interest in going there. But Comey says the FBI had no reason to believe he wanted to attack it or even that he had left Phoenix. And there's no indication, the FBI says, that the officer who ended up shooting Simpson and the other gunman, Nadir Sufi, ever saw that bulletin. Garland police declined to say what they did in response to the information, but insist they had no warning of any planned attack. The FBI says the information about Elton Simpson was not a warning because agents had no idea he left Phoenix. Willie, Savannah?
Fascinating that it came just 3 hours before the attack. Pete Williams on this for us. Thanks, Pete.
Yeah, provocative coincidence that it came just 3 hours before the attack. Isn't that interesting? Another one of those provocative coincidences. And like Mike Rogers said, you know, there are, as a young FBI agent, you learn there are coincidences, but they're not likely. Then how do these agents explain all of these provocative coincidences? You know, you hear Comey saying, or the reference made to Comey's remarks, hundreds of people, maybe thousands, inspired by this kind of nonsense and the power of ISIS propaganda through social media. That the first question on that should be, how are these social media organizations allowed to persist in the age of artificial intelligence? If technology is going to do anything good, wouldn't one think that this information and the accounts in particular, I mean, if Google and Facebook and YouTube are shutting accounts down for terms of use violations, they say, free speech, really censorship is what it amounts to, then wouldn't one think that these same social media outlets could root out ISIS propaganda being channeled through their social media outlets? One would think. And I always find it interesting when the mainstream media publishes the accounts of ISIS claiming responsibility for such and such through its various social media outlets. That's just fascinating to me. So allowed or permitted or even in kind of a sense condoned, but it's legitimized by the mainstream press. Funny that. Coincidence? Again, another one of those provocative coincidences. And you hear, you know, again, FBI Director Comey's remarks referred to almost as if there's a devil on the shoulder saying kill, kill, kill all day. Well, where is that message coming from? You know, you heard Trevor Aronson say once again that in the case of Sammy Osmakosh, the FBI provided everything. Everything. The car bomb, the AK-47, they helped him make his so-called martyrdom video. They gave him money for a cab so that he could get to where they wanted him to go. They gave him the idea. Everything. He was a hapless fool. And you know, you look at these incidents, it doesn't make any sense, except in that context, except in the Operation Gladio B context. Scaring the people into submission, essentially. FBI COINTELPRO reinvented, repurposed as Operation Gladio, Operation Gladio B, in an effort to essentially terrorize people, to cow the herd, so to speak. In that context, it makes perfect sense, doesn't it? We need to be afraid. Always, you heard FBI Director Comey's remarks referred to, but where have we heard that before? Again, I would refer folks back to the podcast that I mentioned, the aforementioned podcast, What Are the Risks of Terrorism? And the specious narrative that we hear, this fear-based narrative, that was a podcast that was conducted or done back in December of 2015. And you know, we look back at these events, and there are more as a proliferation of evil. But that was an interview of John Mueller and Mark Stewart talking about their book, their new book at the time, Chasing Ghosts, The Policing of Terrorism, with other great references. Mueller mentions the 2010 comedy movie about British jihadists, Four Lions. You know, in this conversation, we might as well mention, we might as well include... you know, Alan Watt has mentioned Brazil for a number of years. Terry Gilliam's Brazil back in 1985. It was funny. It was so outlandish. Today, people might think it's a documentary. But Alan Watt spoke to that many, has spoken to that many times. So Mueller mentions the 2010 British jihadists comedy Four Lions. He also mentions a book of student papers that he edits that follows post 9/11 terror cases in America, Terrorism Since 9/11, The American Cases, originally published back in 2015. And Garrett Graft's book is also mentioned, The Threat Matrix, The FBI at War, published back in 2012. It's a good overview of how the FBI currently responds to terror threats, but the threat matrix is mentioned. There was no such thing in a pre-9/11 America, and now, kind of like the Homeland Security era, the TSA era, suddenly there is this bureaucracy that serves a certain purpose that kind of reminds one of Marshall McLuhan's Medium is the Message. And that certainly not by accident, I would say. So I want to jump into this, and we're coming up on a break, but here, let's just dive into that. This is the interview of John Mueller and Mark Stewart. What are the risks of terrorism?
The following episode discusses issues surrounding terrorism in the United States and abroad. It was recorded before the San Bernardino shootings. Welcome to Free Thoughts from Libertarianism.org and the Cato Institute. I'm Trevor Burrus.
And I'm Aaron Powell.
Joining us today are co-authors of a new book, Chasing Ghosts, The Policing of Terrorism. John Mueller is a senior fellow at the Cato Institute, and he is a member of the Political Science Department and senior research scientist with the Mershon Center for International Security Studies at Ohio State University. Mark G. Stewart is professor of civil engineering at the University of Newcastle, Australia. Welcome to Free Thoughts, gentlemen.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Thanks, Evans.
Your book kind of begins, I mean, as most terrorism discussions begin, with 9/11. What was the mindset immediately post 9/11? What was the mindset of the defense security establishment about terrorism?
Well, it was just hysterical. Basically, they were finding ghosts, that we call them, but terrorists under every rock. In 2002, they were telling journalists there between 2,000 and 4,000 Al-Qaeda operatives at loose in the United States, and the number we now know is very close to zero. So they're a constant. Everybody seems to have been in intelligence ready and worrying about an immediate second wave, which never happened, of course.
Were you ever able to figure out how they got this 2,000 or 4,000 number?
No. It says, well, that's sort of the hysterical aspect of it. They were apparently finding them all over the place, or thinking they're finding them. They talk about, we hear them talking to each other. And there's a few cases where they might have done that. But what's bizarre is people haven't gone back and said to these people, you know, you should ask the Intelligence Committee, where'd you come up with 2,000 to 4,000? I mean, it's just not like off by a factor of 4 or something. It's off by a huge amount.
Is there a sense that they were intentionally inflating that number, or just so paranoid in the months and years immediately following that they just weren't, I guess, thinking rationally if the number's off by that amount?
I think the latter, institutionalized paranoia. And you get reports, people are saying that everybody believed that, everybody in the intelligence, which is bizarre. You think there's a few people saying, well, you know, maybe there won't be a second wave. Maybe they aren't all there. I mean, George Bush opens his book saying that right after 9/11, the director of the FBI comes in and says, there are 331 Al-Qaeda operatives working in the United States. And Bush is writing his book 10 years later, and he doesn't say, whatever happened to those 331? So the thing is that no one goes back to these people and saying, how come you're so bad, so wrong?
Is the security establishment as such that you could have this kind of swirling misinformation where no one knows where anything actually comes from? Everyone seems to believe that it's 2,000 to 4,000 Al-Qaeda operatives because their friend in the next cubicle told them that, and their friend in the next cubicle told them that, and that's just basically the source of the belief is sort of a self-sustaining delusion that they all work off of and they can't gainsay.
Yeah, that's a major problem in intelligence. Basically, you're tied into a small number of people who can look at the classified intelligence. The classified intelligence is overwhelming, so that's all you read. That's all they read. And you get into this mindset. Nonetheless, it's as absurd that no one was saying maybe there won't be a second wave. Maybe we've overestimated them. That would just be a hypothesis. Who knows? You can't be sure, but you'd think somebody would say that. A year after 9/11, I did an article, it was in National Interest, and got picked up as an op-ed by the Washington Post, suggesting that maybe 9/11 was an outlier, that it was not a harbinger, but basically an aberration. I didn't say it was, you know, I just said we ought to consider the possibility, you know, that it might be an aberration. They published it in the National Interest, and it was labeled a 9/11 provocation. That someone could is a very provocative that you could even bring up the possibility that this was an aberration, so that was very much the mentality, and it continued on.
Why would it be an aberration? If it is an aberration, it seems odd that it would be, given how common terrorist attacks are all over the world.
Yeah, well, there hasn't been that much in the whole world outside of war zones. It seems to be there's maybe 200 to 400 people killed each year by Muslim extremist terrorists outside of war zones each year, and that include London and Bali and Mumbai and so forth. So it's not that there's a whole lot of it going on, and there's the countries like Canada or Australia, obviously, that have found virtually none.
Yeah, and it seems that this observation is never really made publicly. I mean, I think the politicians don't really like to think about that. They just want to think about what might happen next rather than actually what is happening and what does the data actually show us and what's the evidence.
But we often get the sense, I mean, we hear stories in the newspaper that it seems like the U.S. government is always stopping another attack. You know, we're constantly hearing stories about the FBI arrested this particular guy who was planning something, or we're told, you know, there was a threat and then the assumption is, and therefore government stopped it. So if you take, you know, the front page of the major newspapers at face value, it does feel like there's a fair number of threats on a fairly regular basis, and we've either just been lucky or really good.
There's extensive sections of the book dealing with the homegrown, the terrorists who've plotted, supposedly been arrested, or have actually consummated violence in the United States. And the more you look into these cases, the more pathetic and trivial they become. Many of them, over half of them, have had an FBI informant who has been egging the would-be terrorist on. That doesn't mean, of course, that terrorists wouldn't have figured out on his own completely, but that seems to be a very common phenomenon. There's a British movie called Four Lions, which I strongly recommend, which basically seems to get much closer to what the average terrorist's lot is like. Basically, four bumbling or five bumbling, actually, terrorists in Britain, directed by Chris Morris. So anyway, when these things do get put forward, they do tend to be exaggerated. The police want to indicate that what they might have done, and what they had intentions of doing, and they often had grandiose schemes like toppling the Sears Tower, things like that. Commonly talked about is the fact that they didn't have the remote capacity to do it, and that most of them didn't even know where Chicago was. So.
What is the? You open up your book discussing the threat matrix and the sort of briefing system of the establishment. How does that system work?
Yeah, it came out. I talked to one former CIA guy, Glenn Carl, about it, and he said it emerged initially. Because after 9/11, George W. Bush said, give me your 10 most wanted list for terrorists, and they didn't have anything like that. And so literally overnight they invented the threat matrix. And what it is any squib of information, any tip, in other words, that might lead to terrorism has to be examined, and it gets put in this massive matrix. The number of tips in FBI and other government agencies have followed up since 9/11 is well over 10 million. And the number, we know certainly the number of those who have proved fruitful, and they're incredibly small. And then when they do prove fruitful, frequently the people you actually end up with are rather pathetic losers who are unlikely to do much of anything, though they did have the terrorist kind of mentality in them. And what seems to happen, there's a very good book on this by Garrett Graff called The FBI, called The Threat Matrix, about the FBI. And he goes into chapter and verse about these tips coming in, and you basically are surrounded by them all the time, and your whole life is on these tips, and many of them are horrible, you know, nuclear weapons in the Bronx and things like that. The fact that hardly any of them pan out to be anything is less considered. And there's also a good book by Jack Goldsmith, a Harvard law professor who came in somewhat later after 9/11 into the Republican administration, and said that, you know, you read this stuff and it literally scare you to death every single day. And he quotes that. That's a fairly direct quote from George Tenet, who is head of the CIA. And Goldsmith says that's the view of everybody who ever read the threat matrix. So you're living with this stuff, and you're scaring yourself to death, and no one says, this is an awful lot of crap, right?
Maybe
there isn't anything out there.
My favorite one is the one entry, and this is a quoting from the book, one entry in the threat matrix is crisply cited as, quote, a threat from the Philippines to attack the United States unless blackmail money was paid. It turns out that this entry was based on an email that said, Dear America, I will attack you if you don't pay me $9999999999, mwahahahaha.
Right.
And on that note, we'll be right back. Stick around. We're right after this break.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Extendivite, a 7-herb combination of garlic, cayenne, hawthorn, bilberry, ginkgo biloba, valerian, and milk thistle. Extendivite is designed to strengthen the heart and arteries and help the body heal itself. Doctors are not able to explain the improvements they are seeing in their patients' health who are taking Extendivite. People who once needed more pills are now taking less and getting better. Due to the unexplainable improvements in their patients' health, more doctors are calling to order Extendivite for themselves. Help Extendivite make your doctor a believer. Extendivite is available in capsule or liquid form for just $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To get started, call 1-877-877-877.
1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822. Or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Do you know what's in your body soap? Well, I didn't know the answer until about 5 years ago when I looked at the label of my soap and was shocked to see all the chemicals. For my entire life, I had been assaulting the largest organ of my body, my skin. And to think my children were using it too. Well, a lot has changed since then. Today, my family and I operate Stone City Farms, where we make and sell all natural goat milk soap using fresh goat milk from goats we raise on our farm. Our mission at Stone City Farm is to produce high quality, all natural goat milk soap for people who want a fresh, unrefined natural product. At Stone City Farms, we offer scented and unscented soaps and a signature line of gift sets customizable to your needs. To see what our customers are saying, go to StoneCityFarm.com. Use the code NATURAL for a 20% discount. That's StoneCityFarm.com, code NATURAL for 20% off your order. You never know what could be hiding in your soap.
Do you have difficulty taking supplements? Are you searching for a high-quality, complete nutritional drink that your whole family will love? NutraMedical's Life Support has arrived. All of your daily nutritional requirements in one quick, delicious drink. Dr. Bill Deagle's Life Support is a proprietary blend of vegan protein, activated vitamins, essential minerals, amino acids, probiotics, green tea, digestive enzymes, anti-inflammatories, cancer prevention, detoxification, and much more. Your body will high-five you for this one. Life Support is the best complete nutrition meal replacement on the market. Whether you are an elite athlete, have post-operative challenges, chronic illness, elderly, or a family that just wants a quick, delicious drink, try Dr. Bill Deagle's Life Support for optimized nutrition in one great-tasting smoothie. Just add cold water, almond milk, fruit, or anything else you like. NutraMedical's Life Support. Try our great-tasting chocolate or vanilla today. Call 888-212-8871 or visit us online at NutraMedical.com. NutraMedical.com for the whole family.
It's time for you to have your own custom smartphone app for your business and pay way less than you can imagine. Introducing the I Can Get To Silent Salesman mobile marketing app, a global mobile marketing and communication tool for your business. Go to appsapart.com and learn how you could earn up to $36,351 or more per month just by inviting two people or less into a $14.95 per month program. Go to appsapart.com and be sure to watch the video at the top of the site and listen to the audio message from the CEO near the bottom. This is something you won't want to miss. Go to appsapart.com now or call 646-860-9540. That's 646-860-9540. Get the I Can Get To. That's I-C-A-N-G-E-T, the number 2, Silent Salesman app at appsapart.com. That's appsapart.com.
Welcome back. Bottom of the second hour of today's Road Warrior Radio broadcast. This Monday, March 27, 2017. We need to rewire or pre-wire, return our thinking to its pre-propaganda state, to reinstitute critical thought. In America, we see the same recycled narrative used over and over and over again. But there's no congressional... we get further and further away from accountability, it seems. There's, a lot of pushing and shoving going on right now. A lot of weird stuff happening in Washington, D.C. Jared Kushner being appointed, whatever that is, yet volunteering to go speak to the Senate committee about his involvement in meetings with Russian officials. is interesting. What is it? The American Innovation? Something. I'll get back to that. But, you know, we keep hearing the same recycled narrative. It's the frenemy. Yesterday's friend is tomorrow's enemy, and oh, we didn't see that coming. You know, we played the clip, NBC reporting, you know, the FBI. We always hear the same narrative, just like with Khalid Massoud in London. The intelligence community was aware, and they keep kind of try to cover their tracks, but they don't do it quite effectively because the alternative, I would say the real news community points to the fact that it's awfully strange that the intelligence community knows about these people. Even in the case of Elton Simpson and Nadir Sufi, alert Garland police, local law enforcement, that you know, these guys are, Elton Simpson in particular, a person of interest, 3 hours before the incident, that he's interested in the event. Why is he in town? Why is the FBI agent, undercover agent, tailing them and taking pictures of the crime scene, the attack? It's always the same MO. Why are we not paying closer attention to this? And if there is, as Trevor Aronson says, one organization responsible for more terror attacks than any other organization, any more than the top three combined, why are we not taking that into serious consideration? FBI, Trevor Aronson said, you heard, and he proves it. The FBI is responsible for more terrorism plots in the United States than any other organization. Why is that not a mainstream story? Why isn't the mainstream press ablaze with that 60 Minutes clip? Just the clip that we played, for example, the 1 minute FBI undercover agent tailing Simpson and Sufi before the Garland, Texas terror attack. Yet we hear the words in the clip that we played, the FBI, the NBC News clip back from May of 2015, FBI alerted Garland police about Elton Simpson hours before shooting. We hear FBI Director Comey saying, there's a terrorist under every rock, they're everywhere, hundreds, maybe thousands, probably thousands. All of this kind of fear-mongering, hundreds of people, maybe thousands, of power of ISIS propaganda through social media, almost as if there's a devil on the shoulder saying, kill, kill, kill all day. Comey said the FBI alerted local law enforcement. If this is all true, then doesn't that validate I want to say John Mueller and Mark Stewart's conjecture in their book, Chasing Ghosts, The Policing of Terrorism, but it's really not conjecture. Does it validate their proven point, their proven position? You know, you heard Mueller in the clip that we played, the last clip that we played, talking about, I mean, Trevor Burrus opens the interview asking the question, your book begins with 9/11, as most terrorism discussions begin. That's interesting, isn't it? And then there are a number of provocative points that are made there. What was the mindset immediately post 9/11 in the defense security establishment about terrorism? John Mueller answers immediately, it was hysterical. Basically, they were finding ghosts, I believe you called them. A terrorist under every rock. That sentiment's echoed 15 years later. Doesn't it sound strikingly similar to the Bush administration narrative regarding weapons of mass destruction? We know that was a lie. This terrorism fabrication is a lie. Why are we not, as John Mueller points out, circling back? Why is no one asking questions? He continues, in 2002, they were telling journalists there are between 2,000 and 4,000 al-Qaeda operatives. Remember when we were hearing that? There are cells everywhere. Where did al-Qaeda in America go? Is it just the intelligence community and TSA and DHS see something, tell someone campaign, specious as it is, working so effectively that they're rooting out al-Qaeda? No. As Mueller pointed out, they were telling journalists between 2,000 to 4,000 al-Qaeda operatives on the loose in the United States, and the number we now know, you heard him say, is very close to zero. So they were worrying about a second wave, and Trevor Burrus asks, were you ever able to find out how they got this 2,000 to 4,000 figure? Mueller said no. But that's the hysterical aspect. This hysterical insanity that we are just constantly marinating in. Which gets back to turn of the 20th century, Carnegie Endowment, steering America into a perpetual state of war. Because you can do things, as Rahm Emanuel intimated 10 years ago, you can do things in this mindset, this crisis, perpetual state of crisis, that you can't get people to do otherwise. If we settle down and we look at the facts simply stated are that there aren't 2,000 to 4,000 terrorists, there aren't thousands, as Director Mueller suggests, there aren't even hundreds, as Director Mueller suggests. There is a coordinated propaganda campaign that is being waged in cooperation with the intelligence community. That's a proven fact. You heard Trevor Aronson talk about that. Why does Director Mueller not talk about that? His agents helping folks like Sammy Osmakosh make a martyrdom video. The FBI involved in the making of a martyrdom video, so-called. Why doesn't Director Mueller talk about that? Because obviously that would be inimical to the interests of fighting the war on terror, as specious as that war may be, ostensible as those efforts may be. Very provocative realization. John Mueller talking about the hysteria. He asked the intelligence community, where did you come up with the 2,000 to 4,000? Because it's not off by a factor of 4 or 10. It's essentially just off the charts. I like Aaron Ross Powell's question. Is there a sense that they were intentionally inflating that number, or just so paranoid in the months and years immediately following? They just weren't thinking rationally. John Mueller says the latter, institutionalized paranoia. But I would conjecture it's more than that. You combine this interview with Trevor Aronson's TED Talk and you come up with a more reasonable explanation, being it's kind of a combination of both. Intentionally inflating and the institutionalized paranoia, as John Mueller puts it. People... everybody in intelligence, you know, believing this, which is bizarre, as Mueller put it, which is why it doesn't make any sense. And then pointing out, again, George Bush opens his book right after 9/11. The director of the FBI comes in and says, we know, just like we heard in the clip that we played, NBC, 2015, Director Comey saying, I know. Doesn't that make you wonder? It kind of sounds like OJ's defense, absolutely, or Johnny Cochran, absolutely 100% not guilty. If the gloves don't fit, you must acquit. Director of the FBI comes out and says, we know there are 331 al-Qaeda operatives working in the United States, and Bush, writing his book 10 years later, he doesn't say whatever happened to those 331. Yes, what did happen to those 331 known al-Qaeda operatives? So we never go back and ask, how come you were so wrong? As Mueller puts it. Great point. Why aren't we asking? How is it that these people that are known fall through the cracks, or they end up being found out as hapless dupes of the intelligence community? Why aren't we looking there first? So again, back to the cognitive dissonance, the normalcy bias. If Trevor Aronson is right, you combine Trevor Aronson's TED Talk with sentiments like what we played, the last clip we played, what are the risks of terrorism, interview of John Mueller and Mark Stewart about their 2015 book, Chasing Ghosts, The Policing of Terrorism, then, and while we're at it, you know, the 60 Minutes piece examining Garland, Texas a little bit closer. The fact that the attackers were being tailed. Law enforcement, local law enforcement, was alerted by the FBI hours before the shooting. Elton Simpson was interested in the event. It was a known fact. The FBI is tailing him. Why was he allowed to continue if this was all known? So then what about the specifics of the knowledge? And as we heard in the clip, I agree. Why aren't we hearing from the FBI? What other communication did the FBI have with Elton Simpson and Nadir Soufi? I think those are provocative questions. See, those questions seem to get lost in this narrative. But why is that? How convenient in the Operation Gladio B era? I think if Congress was going to do anything right now to help fight the war on terror, specious as it may be, maybe we could, or even the Trump administration, we could implement some policy that if there is one of these lone wolf or lone actor, as the popular term keeps morphing, which are usually almost without exception always known wolves, as Patrick Henningsen over at 21st Century Wire has pointed out. So we should call them known wolves because they are. I mean, Khalid Massoud, the London attacker, or the suspect of the latest London incident, another known actor, known wolf. So if the Trump administration or Congress wanted to do anything to thwart these activities, knowing that this happens, why isn't anyone asking Director Comey about the terrorists that the FBI creates, that information that Trevor Aronson has put out in particular that hasn't been rebutted by the intelligence community? If the Trump administration and or Congress instituted some policy that when these incidents occur, the intelligence community is investigated first, the FBI domestically, the CIA abroad in particular, to the highest levels, those folks would be investigated first and held responsible for any collusive activities, including prison time. I would imagine this nonsense would stop fairly quickly. These orchestrated terror plots, false flag, COINTELPRO style Operation Gladio B terror attacks. I didn't mean to get sidetracked on this for the entirety of today's broadcast, but it's important. I can't overemphasize or stress enough the importance of viewing these incidents in proper context. I mean, if you or I were doing these things, we would be viewed as guilty of a crime. Yet the intelligence community does this, and it's not criminal. The words ostensible and plausible deniability and related terms are always invoked. It's not entrapment when the FBI creates terrorists. It really just fabricates them out of nowhere. I mean, handing a plot and all of the accoutrements for said plot to a mentally infirmed person through an informant, and that's not a crime? It would be if you did, if I did. It's just astonishing what is happening in this country, and it's being normalized. And this is not a secret. 60 Minutes did a piece. How close was the FBI to terror attack in Garland, Texas? Well, right behind it, taking pictures of it. And that's okay? America, wake up. We'll be right back.
If your home has hard water, then it's likely that LimeScale is clogging your pipes, damaging your appliances, costing you hundreds of dollars each year. You can eliminate LimeScale in the entire house with HydroCare products available at Wave Home Solutions. Easy and efficient with no maintenance, no salts, no chemicals.
Favorite authors and discover some new ones. It's free, readily available online or on mobile with any smartphone or tablet. Finding your favorite talk shows all in one place has gotten a whole lot easier. Just go to TalkStreamLive.com. Be sure to download the free apps from Google Play or the iTunes App Store.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magful clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AirOutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AirOutfitting.com.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Last November, Maynard was given another batch of documents by the government, revealing the biggest surprise of all. The undercover agent was in a car directly behind Elton Simpson. Taken by the undercover agent, seconds before the attack.
The idea that he's taken a photograph of the two people who happen to be attacked moments before they're attacked
is stunning.
I mean, talk about being in the right or the wrong place at the right or the wrong time.
The idea that he's right there 30 seconds before the attack happens is just incredible to me.
What would you want to ask the undercover agent?
I would love to ask the undercover agent, are these the only communications that you had with Simpson? Did you have more communications with Simpson? How is it that you ended up coming to Garland, Texas? Why are you even there?
Time to put your thinking cap on, America. That was a clip, an excerpt from the 60 Minutes episode that aired this weekend, March 26th, 2017. And that was an interesting kind of ambiguous reference there by Anderson Cooper, right, being at the right or wrong place at the right or wrong time. 60 Minutes investigates first ISIS-claimed attack in U.S. and what the FBI knew is the title of the 60 Minutes piece. A terrorist attack in Texas by two U.S. citizens shows how hard it is to prevent such an attack, even when one of the terrorists is well known to the FBI. Utter nonsense. Just utter nonsense. It's a coincidence that the FBI informed local law enforcement hours before the attack, and an undercover FBI agent was tailing Elton Simpson and Nadir Sufi before the incident. Just happened to be, tailing them. And of course they were from out of town, but no one talks about this stuff. The fact that Khalid Massoud rents an SUV, or did he? Allegedly. Yeah, it was a rented SUV, rented 4x4 that was used in the driving into people, and that's been talked about for quite some time. You'll never see that. It's kind of interesting. You'll never see that happen in an old pre-Cash for Clunkers automobile, because in the post 9/11 era, everything can be hacked, as the WikiLeaks CIA Vault 7 release clearly indicated, which is something that isn't a mystery, hasn't been a mystery, it's just confirmation. But it's time to put our thinking caps on, America. I mean, if the possibility exists, and if the preponderance of evidence seems to point to Operation Gladio and Gladio B in particular style events, then at what point do we not look there, dismiss that, turn away, and listen to the suggestibilists who tell us that, it's a terrorist under every rock, even though that's been a proven falsehood time and time again, as you heard from John Mueller in the What Are the Risks of Terrorism interview, the clip that we played. We need to put our thinking caps on, America. Let's get smart, as Big Joe would say. That'll do it for today. I hope it was informative. As always, it truly is an honor and a pleasure. Stay tuned for Dr. Deagle. Take care. God bless. We'll catch you on the other side.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are
are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll-free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network.